All right. It's Warriors HQ time. Dieter Kurtenbach and Wes Goldberg. We work at the Merc. We talk about the Warriors and write about them, too. We're going to talk about the second preseason game today. Look forward to the final preseason game, both against the Sacramento Kings. Do we want to talk about Kyle Guy's incredible game-winning shot, Wes? Is that what we really want to lead off with for the Kings, our NorCal neighbors?
The piped-in crowd noise at Golden 1 Center loves them some Kyle Guy, for sure.
He was good.
They drafted him last year. I remember coming up for a couple games, and they were really psyched about him. You know what? If you're a Kings fan, I guess you just get excited for whatever you can at this point. So, good for them.
Same way Warriors fans get excited for whatever they can in a certain way. I mean, who would you rather have, Kyle Guy or Jordan Poole? I know where you lie on that, but Kyle Guy has turned into it. I think he could be a nice, solid 10-12 minute a game point guard. You don't play him with Fox. I'm sorry, we're not going to go too deep into the Sacramento
Kings. I was about to say, this is what the Warriors fans have been craving, is Kyle Guy content.
Listen, by the midseason, we might be trying to pivot to Sacramento Kings basketball. I was unimpressed generally with how the Warriors played in that second preseason game. And Curry did what we asked him to do. Thanks for listening and subscribing, Steph. We said it would be great if you could just go nuclear, and he did. He was absolutely awesome. He looked like midseason Steph Curry. But he was having to work hard for all of those buckets, man. That was a chaos basketball game in the worst possible way. Kelly Oubre did some nice things. The guy that I'm concerned about, understanding fully that Draymond hasn't played yet, that James Wiseman hasn't played yet, but I did not see enough from Andrew Wiggins in that game to make me feel comfortable going into the regular season. He needs to have, if we're taking requests here, if the Warriors are taking requests, he needs to be assertive in game number three. I don't know what that necessarily looks like. I don't know what the box score might say on it, but I need more assertiveness from Andrew Wiggins, because he's the number two on this team, and he has not looked like a number two yet in two preseason games, which I should note, they're playing hard in.
Right, and this was sort of the other side of Andrew Wiggins, right, is the one that people who were Timberwolves fans reached out to Warriors fans very politely and said, well, good luck with that.
Right.
And I don't know that it's going to be that level of floating through things all the time the way it was in Minnesota. Mm. But I was impressed with the way he attacked the game in the preseason opener. And we saw the other version of that here in Sacramento. And over the course of what now is a 72-game regular season, if you're the Warriors, you're just hoping that you get the better version of Andrew Wiggins more often than this version of Andrew Wiggins. But I thought that stood out to me as well. It was a good point you made that Draymond Green wasn't in there. He has a tendency to get more out of guys. And I think he's going to find his responsibility with Andrew Wiggins is going to be just that. But he can't do that, man. Like, he just defensively in particular, I just didn't see it from him. If he is going to indeed be their lockdown defender, and that's what he needs to be that for them, right? If this is going to work out, they're going to be a top 10 defense, like you keep saying. You need Andrew Wiggins to be your best perimeter defender, and he just wasn't last night. And this was – look, Kyle Guy all you want, but this is not a great Kings offense.
And, no.
If Wiggins can't kind of make his impact on that end in this game, you don't love how – it doesn't bode well for this team.
I want to talk about the defense, because Marvin Bagley Jr. was taken second overall right before Luka Doncic, if I remember correctly. If he gets to play the Warriors every night, no one's going to be complaining about that pick moving forward. Bagley was giving the Warriors the business in that game. And I like Bagley. He's never going to live up to the fact that he was taken before Luka or Trae Young, for that matter. But, man, he has struggled, even when healthy, in his short NBA career, and he was ruining the Warriors on the inside. This is now two games where they have just gotten decimated on the inside. So I do want to bring up Wiseman in the sense that, hey, man, he should be able to do something better than that. Like, Kevon Looney is not necessarily a rim protector. He's a sharp defender, but you like him in switching situations. Marquise Chris is not that guy. He'll give you a block every now and again, but it's usually a weak side block that he comes in and does something cool with because he has athleticism. I mean, James Wiseman's a rookie, and so this is way too much to be putting on a young guy like that. but ultimately he's the one who can protect the rim because he has a wingspan of roughly 11.5. And he should be able to turn into a guy who can anchor a defense at least in the lane, or at least you feel comfortable funneling things to him in the lane. So understanding that things can get better there, they talk about this top 10 defense. I think they're lucky if they don't have a bottom 10 defense, given the way that they've performed, again, in two preseason games that they are playing hard in so far. Marvin Bagley cannot be ruining you the way that he was ruining you last night, straight up.
Right. It's one thing when Nikola Jokic does it in the opener. You're like, well, that's one of the best 8 or 9 players in the NBA. Fair 100%. Enough. It's another thing when Marvin Bagley does it, and that's not. Yeah. And you know, let's slow the roll a little bit. Kevon Looney, you're right. There's an issue there. He's 6'9". He's undersized by most standards against other starting centers. They're also starting Juan Toscano-Anderson at power forward last night, who's 6'6". And he was the guy guarding Marvin Bagley at tip. That would be typically Draymond Green's responsibility. I trust Draymond, call me crazy, a little bit more than Juan Toscano-Anderson in that matchup.
Yeah, I will call you crazy.
And so it is hard to really – and look, I mentioned that Wiggins is that lockdown perimeter defender. He needs to be the shutdown corner, right? Mm-hmm. And Draymond Green is the middle linebacker. And without that organizer there, it's really hard to get a full view of what this defense is going to be. And it's hard to kind of create a complete evaluation. That said, they do look soft in the middle. And you wonder if they try to keep expectations for Wiseman down. But at the end of the day, he's a really large human. And it kind of feels like they need a really large human as close to the basket as possible.
And this is something that we have talked about before. I'm concerned that because they're not getting a full training camp with Wiseman and Green, that they're going to have to settle for a lesser form of defense because they just have to get something together before the season opener. And then they have to adapt on the fly. And that's so hard to do. I mean, how many times we've covered the NBA long enough that we've heard this now a million times and we roll our eyes every time we hear it, but coaches in the middle of the season being like, well, we just haven't had enough practice time. The time that you have practice time is the preseason. This is the time. Now, you don't have a lot of it this year, and now you don't have the two most important defenders, I would say. I mean, yes, Wiggins needs to be a guy. Oubre needs to be a guy. But the guy who can actually protect the rim and your defensive ace, those are the two most important guys on your defense. You don't have them. And I'm just they need to be a top 10 defense. They need to be something like that, because I want to talk to you about this and I want your perspective. You were there. You saw it firsthand. You could feel it a little bit more than I could. Steph had to work really hard for a lot of those buckets. It looked like Steph was going up no KD in the playoffs, and that was preseason basketball. And yes, Draymond spaces the floor better, and maybe you're doing far more pick and roll when Draymond and Wiseman are out there. Either one of them, you're doing more pick and roll. But geez Louise, he had to work hard. And you got to do that for 70 games. I mean, I keep going back to it. And until I'm proven wrong, I'm going to do it. Big time last year Blazer vibes, where Dame Lillard is just having to put the team on his back every night and just do crazy stuff every night. And he's going to score 50 and they still might not win. I don't know if this team can be a top 10 offense unless Steph is the MVP of the league. Straight up.
He needs to get some votes for sure. We did bold predictions on one of these radio shows or podcasts that we do.
We talk a lot. And I
almost went that direction, is that Steph will finish in the top 3 in MVP. And I think that could still be the case. It was telling to me when I mentioned Juan Toscano-Anderson started. He didn't to start the second half.
Right.
Wanamaker. Steve Kerr put Brad Wanamaker in there, understanding that they needed more of a ball handler in there, somebody to help take Steph off the ball and play make a little bit. And we knew Steve anticipated playing Wanamaker alongside Steph Curry for that exact reason. Mm-hmm. Wanamaker had a bad night and quickly was yanked for Nico Mannion, who was very impressive, I thought.
I like Nico.
Dare I say, more impressive than even somebody like Kyle Guy, potentially. But –
okay, Kyle Guy had a really good game. He's not going to have a lot of them. We're done talking about Kyle Guy. I opened Pandora's box. That's on me. That's on me.
But with Nico Mannion in there, you saw Steph playing a little bit more free, right? He was able to do his roaming thing that he does so well. And there's a reason why he had his best – he and the Warriors' offense had their best quarter so far of the preseason. Steph scored 11 points in that third quarter. And the Warriors narrowed what was a 19-point lead down to, I believe, 7, 88 to 81 going into that fourth quarter. And so I, that Steve Kerr found something there, but usually, right, you wouldn't have to compromise if Draymond Green were in the game. He would have the power forward that he needs on defense, and then he would also have the ball handler there on offense. And so, again, I'll say this. We try to figure out what these trends are going to be in these things. It is so clear to me that Draymond Green is going to be so important to this team, which is – kind of scary when you think about it.
Right.
And it's not because it's anything against Draymond. It's just if you're relying so much on basically two dudes, and he's – and look, it's a coronavirus. It's not a traditional type of injury. But if you lose one of these guys for even a little bit or one of them tests positive – I don't know.
Well, Draymond's immune for life, and I don't know. Steph has enough money that he might have already gotten vaccinated, but like
Draymond Green is Super Mario star for the rest of the season.
Antibody all star.
Yeah, antibody all star. So he'll be fine. And maybe this is the best. This may have been the best case scenario for the Warriors.
Not for their defense, but I'm with you when you're relying that much. You are somebody who brings this up a lot, and I am more and more every day coming into your camp. This is a duo league. We're playing in the NBA Jam era of basketball. And that 1-2 is Draymond and Steph. And you can say, you know, Steph is as elite of an offensive player as there is. Draymond is as elite of a defensive player as there is. Maybe the trade-offs that they make are equal on the other side of the court. I don't have a problem with that, but that 1-2 doesn't really compare. I mean, that's again, we're back in the Portland Trail Blazers region of 1-2. We're not competing for a championship with that 1-2. Now, if you have an awesome 3-4 on top of that, if you toss in a 5, now you got something cooking.
Well, that was supposed to be the whole Warriors thing, right? Is that
they
weren't going to have that elite 1-2 like LeBron and Anthony Davis or Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray or something like that at that level at this point, but they'd have Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and then, you know, Andrew Wiggins looks a lot better there than he does as the number two option on offense here.
And when we talked about it last, I mean, it's one of these simple things where it's like Kelly Oubre is a 3 who wants to be a 2. Andrew Wiggins is a 2 who wants to be a 3. The fact that either of those guys are being discussed in those roles, the fact that Kelly Oubre has to be a 3 says something. The fact that, you know, Andrew Wiggins has to be a 2 says something. And even if Draymond's out there and just goes, you know, Luke Walton is the coach level of three-point shooting, it doesn't change it. This doesn't mean that he doesn't facilitate in really good ways and that he doesn't help the offense in a lot of ways. But you don't have to respect him as an outside shooter. He doesn't help space the floor all that much outside of the actual actions that he does. And maybe, you know, it's good because Oubre can hang out in the corner and he likes to knock down open three-point shots in the corner. Maybe it helps because Wiggins doesn't feel so much responsibility as a ball handler, though I haven't seen that so much in these first two games. Like maybe Draymond does unlock everything, but just looking at it the way, you know, what we have right now, I'm not sure Draymond just fixes these problems on either end of the court. He certainly helps. I'm not sure he fixes them.
Yeah, right. He helps, but how much does he help? How much does he lift both sides? Does he lift this defense into a top 10? No. But based on what we've seen in his first two preseason games, you're right. This so far is a bottom 10 defense, not a top 10 defense. Green coming back. Draymond, he makes it maybe a league average defense, which is, again, that's an improvement from where they were last year and an improvement from where they are now.
Right.
Offensively, I think he can actually have a little bit, strangely enough, help a little bit more there than he even does on defense at this point, because I just have so many more question marks defensively where on offense, it's like, I just have somebody who knows how to get Steph the ball. And that can really open things up. I was impressed. The other thing I'm watching in these preseason games is who starts to develop this chemistry with Steph. The line of questioning that Steph Curry and Steve Kerr are getting in these interviews, to me, I found a little strange, because it's how long does it take for a team to develop the chemistry that they need with Steph? And I don't think that's the right logic. It's not like, hey, Kelly Oubre, you have chemistry with Steph? Well, now we all have chemistry with Steph. It doesn't work that way. It's one player at a time, right? Everybody has a different rhythm, and it depends. Like if Oubre and Wiggins are playing more minutes with Steph than Bazemore and Wanamaker, then they're going to probably get chemistry before those guys do.
Right.
And I saw flashes of, speaking of Kelly Oubre and Steph Curry, it was in that third quarter, it kind of started to feel like it was clicking for Kelly Oubre. They connected on a couple of assists and shot makes there. And there was a nice little kind of chaos two-man game happening. Mm-hmm. That was, to me, promising, right? Once Draymond comes back and you could just have one other dude out there that just knows what's going on and kind of says, oh, I see it now. I see the big picture here. I get it. I know how to play with Steph now. That's going to go a long way in fixing this offense.
It's true. But then the other issue is you have one more preseason game. Who knows how the Warriors are going to treat that one? And then you get the Brooklyn Nets. And the Nets aren't a team that needs to figure stuff out. The play is simple. Kyrie has the ball, and Kyrie either gives it to Kevin, who then does whatever he wants, or he does whatever he wants. That's their system. And get open. And it's going to work because Kyrie looks good. And Kevin might have lost 10%, but it doesn't matter because he's Kevin Durant. And not to put too much stock in one game, but right now I feel better about where the Nets are than where the Warriors are. And chaos basketball, this is another thing. We talked about this on Locked On. Chaos basketball is great. Sometimes there are going to be teams that are wanting you to play that style. Sacramento wanted them to play that style. They like playing chaos too. That game was sloppy as hell on purpose. Mm-hmm. There are some other teams that really thrive when you're not solid. And I think the Nets could be one of them. And I'm just fascinated to see how the Warriors respond. And we'll talk before then, but this is, front of mind for me right now. I'm fascinated to see how the Warriors respond if they do get off to the slow start that Steve Kerr keeps hinting at and their play keeps hinting at, that it's going to take a while for this to gel, for it to mesh. And it makes perfect sense as to why, but how do they respond to that? Do they stay the course mm-hmm. when it comes to the systems and the stuff that they're trying to do? I don't know because ultimately the margin for error is very low in the Western Conference. And it's especially lower now that you have to be in the top six to really make the playoffs, the playoffs in earnest. Mm-hmm. And there's just so many ways. I mean, obviously, as with any season, there's so many ways that this can go. It's the NBA. It's absolutely wild. But man, I mean, you get off to a slow start. I mean, it's one thing to lose to Brooklyn. It's one thing to lose to Milwaukee. Those are exceptional teams. Or they should be exceptional teams. You can't lose to Chicago. You can't lose to Chicago early and not expect a tremendous amount of slander, even if you're working through some stuff. Season's on. Everyone's working through stuff. What do you have? It can't all be perfect. So what do you have that you can make work in the meantime? Because we all got to be a little bit pragmatic in this 2021 season. And again, right now, I wasn't all that impressed with Wiggins in the first game. I didn't see the spark. Was he better than he was in the second game? Absolutely. But I didn't necessarily see it as like, oh boy, this is really clicking. And at some point you have to just say, dude's 8 years in, this is what he is. And if he is this, I really do fear for their ability to do anything more than make that play in series. That's where I stand now. Hopefully I'm proven wrong because I'd prefer to watch better basketball as the season progresses.
Well, this is why they've put, you mentioned needing something solid to fall back on. This is why they've put all of their eggs in the top 10 defense basket, right? Yeah. Is the idea, at least from a coach's standpoint, is that you could control defense because defense is about effort and all these fun things.
Yeah.
And they wanted to lean on the athleticism stuff. And by the way, they have really kind of dumbed things down without Draymond Green in there. This modern type of defense that I thought we were going to see with a lot more aggressive, pick and roll type coverage and blitzing, just not doing it.
They're
I
switching.
Think, and they're, yeah. And so I think we'll see maybe more of that get involved later on in the year. Mm-hmm. But I think Steve Kerr is kind of looking at this group and is like, all right, let's not give them too much too soon. Let's just be really solid on that end right now. And they haven't been. And again, without Draymond, but I do struggle to see how this team is that good out of the gate because their defense is going to be so important early on, specifically to create opportunities for this offense. And I'm just not really seeing it right now. And you're right. You need one of Wiggins or Oubre to step up. And Oubre has his moments like he always has. Mm-hmm. But Wiggins has now not really made an impact in two preseason games where he really has to. And you're right. You know, I kind of gave him the benefit of the doubt after the first game. I said the eye test was more friendly than the box score.
Same.
He was taking threes, and you like to see that. Like, you like to see that aggression. He took fewer threes in game two of the preseason. He floated through that game defensively in a way mm-hmm. that I thought he was more aggressive in the first one. Mm-hmm. it's, you can't just give him the benefit of the doubt all the time. It's like, he's 8 years into his career.
Man,
you kind of have to score 15 points a game now, like, efficiently. You kind of have to play really hard on defense, and that's not asking for a lot.
No, no. And I'm going to refuse to bring up the contract at all this season because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He is a player whose role, whether that be defined by contract or, you know, laid on him by contract or whatever, his draft pick, doesn't matter. All that stuff is gone. They traded D'Angelo Russell for him. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that matters. That's the only comparison that plays. D'Angelo Russell was a horrendous defender. He could get you 30.
He could.
No
he
one
could get you a bucket.
No one questioned if D'Angelo Russell could get you a bucket.
I brought this up, and I got a little hate for it on Twitter. I said that the Warriors opening day lineup, projected with Draymond Green healthy, is only marginally better than last year's opening day lineup, which it sounds bananas. I get it, because the Warriors were 15-50 last year. Steph Curry, D'Angelo Russell, Glenn Robinson III, Draymond Green, Kevon Looney. Now this one is Steph Curry, Kelly Oubre, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, Kevon Looney. It's, I would say, marginally better, just really because of the Oubre. The Glenn Robinson to the Oubre improvement. But I still, like, D'Angelo Russell's a better basketball player than Andrew Wiggins is. Andrew Wiggins is a better fit for the Warriors. And I don't think that's a polarizing statement. I think we can all agree to that. D'Angelo Russell has made an all-star game in the East, so you can say he made half an all-star game. But that's half more than Andrew Wiggins has.
No, it's true. It's true. I mean, and ultimately – you know, this is going to be the theme of the season, and we've already talked about it and written about it too much. And this team looked completely lost in the first two games when Steph wasn't on the floor, which is to be expected. You expect a downturn. You don't have Steph Curry. And Draymond Green maybe helps with that. I don't know what's the latest on if they're going to stagger him or not. I mean, do we have intel on that at all?
No, I mean, the plan so far, and look, Draymond still hasn't even scrimmaged yet, so we'll know more probably later this afternoon, but the plan is for Steph and Draymond to play together, and then for Kelly Oubre and then Andrew Wiggins to play together in that second unit. And
yikes.
But we expect that to be tinkered with throughout the year, and they may have to. I don't know. I don't know how that second unit creates offense, and it's going to – everybody keeps saying, you know, the defense is going to have to turn to offense. Well, that's – then you got to get better defensively. And I just, it's kind of, it just feels like every time we ask these questions, it's like, well, there's the hole, and then you're trying to put your thumb in, and there's water's coming out somewhere else.
And one step beyond that, you go, okay, well, the defense can turn into offense. Not if the defense is only getting stops at the hoop, which, by the way, they're not doing. Not if everybody's entire offensive game plan when it comes to going up against the Warriors is just pound it in the lane. It's the defense is halfway set for the other team. If you're trying to go in transition, everyone's hanging around the 3-point line. They're running with you. The whole point is that you get stops on the perimeter. It doesn't even get close to the hoop. So now you're running and you got a bunch of guys on the other end who are hanging out at the baseline. And in that half second where they don't know if they have the ball or not, you're gone. You're gone and you're making things happen. That's real transition. If you get the ball at the bottom of the basket, great. You got a possession. But you're not getting real transition opportunities. And ultimately, it seems as if every team in the NBA, if they're smart, and I take, you know, 90% of them are smart, are just going to pound it in the lane until the Warriors prove that they can't do it. And maybe Draymond changes that. Maybe Brad Wanamaker in those hands changes that. Maybe James Wiseman makes them think twice. But if those guys aren't on the floor, or a combination of those guys aren't on the floor, you're going to have Marvin Bagley's going off every night.
Right.
I mean, Lauri Markkanen's going to get right in game three. It's just like, it's just one of those things. I mean, what's Wendell Carter going to do to this team? We're not even talking about Giannis. We're not even talking about LeBron. We can't even pretend to talk about Anthony Davis. Like, it's very concerning that they're putting so much on this defense when I haven't seen anything from this defense that gives me an indication that they can play a true run and gun. Mm-hmm. And Oubre, you know, bless Oubre. I had a lot of skepticism. I still maintain some skepticism, especially when it comes to half court. But that dude does stuff. For better or for worse, he does stuff. And yes, he will mess up, but I think he gets you more than he gives, you know, or gives you more than he gives up. And that's a positive. Because when the other guy, and you know Steph is an agent of chaos, you know Oubre is an agent of chaos, I can see why they're starting to play well together. You need, if you're going to play chaos basketball, Andrew Wiggins might be the last guy on the planet you want. He's not an agent of chaos. He needs to become an agent of chaos. I'd rather see him fail five times trying to do something than do nothing for 40 minutes.
And you're right. You need guys who force the issue on this team. And you know, not to pound on Juan Toscano-Anderson, but he had an opportunity last night to earn his spot on one of these two-ways, the final two-way spot.
Right.
And he didn't take his first shot attempt of the game until a minute left in the first half.
And he had open ones.
And man, you started. Yeah. And look, people tweet, oh, he's making smart plays and stuff. All right. How many guys do you need on this team to just make smart plays? How many Kent Bazemores do you really need on this team? Right. You just fine. Somebody's got to do something. Somebody's got to force the issue. And Kelly Oubre is not afraid to force the issue. And Steph Curry is not afraid to force the issue. And kind of.
But if those are the only two, and Draymond certainly will force the issue.
And Draymond will too. But, and I think James Wiseman, with the energy that he played with, and that's what stuck out to me when in the comments about Wiseman after the first practice, he plays with so much energy. He was out of position. He made a bunch of mistakes, but he's 19. It's fine.
Good.
But you could teach a guy to be in position. You can totally iron out those mistakes.
He ain't moving.
But at least
much.
He's like, he's doing stuff, right? Like he's leaping, he's jumping, he's running. It just make stuff happen. They're going to need that more than ever. And I do wonder, with Steph Curry, I don't trust the depth on this team right now, because, again, you had a nice Kent Bazemore and Brad Wanamaker showing in game one, and they were both absent in game two.
Oh, I didn't mind Bazemore in game two, but I get what you're saying. Like, listen, these guys were signed on the minimum. If you're expecting them to be dudes every night, listen, the NBA is pretty smart. Like, there's a reason they're on your team.
If Steve Kerr has said he wants to keep Steph's minutes about 34 per game, I do wonder if that needs to float up a little bit more this season based on what we've seen. And you know, and Steph's going to be the first one to tell Steve if that's the case. And in that game against the Kings, he asked Steve Kerr, like, look, we're on a roll. Don't take me out at the end of the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And he played the end of the third quarter. And that was their best quarter.
You can get away with that in the preseason, though, because you don't care about the fourth quarter.
Right, you don't care about the fourth quarter, but he ended up playing 28 minutes in the game. And let's say if he had played the whole fourth quarter, that's I can't do math, but 28 plus 12 seems like a high number. Higher than 40. 34. Yeah, 40. So there we go. Higher than the 34 average. So I don't know that he needs to go out there and play 40 of the 48 minutes, but he might.
Three, four more minutes than he's already going to get. Yeah.
Right, and so those minutes are so important in this league, man. Like, you can lose a game when your best player's on the bench. It happens all the time. And the Warriors have had the luxury of the last few years of when the best player's on the bench, we have the other best player on the court.
Kevin Durant.
Yeah, and they don't now. It's when the best player's on the bench, let's hope that Andrew Wiggins can do stuff. It's like that meme of the guy poking.
Yeah, do
the stick.
Something.
That's the offense when Steph's on the bench. And so you might have to minimize those minutes as much as possible.
This is how every other team in the NBA operates, save for about four or five. So to be fair, this is not a unique issue to the Golden State Warriors.
This is not Armageddon. Yeah.
No. I mean,
this is just welcome to the rest of the NBA. You lived in basketball nirvana for 5 years. Now welcome to what it's really like.
Yeah, the rest of the NBA sucks in comparison, though. Like obviously basketball nirvana is one thing.
Right.
But we should separate basketball nirvana into two separate categories. One, it was the Warriors running a system that nobody else could match, and Curry and Clay coming into their own with Draymond on the other end, and they were doing stuff that no one else was doing. They had a systematic advantage on both ends of the floor for 2 years in that nobody was running as much motion. Nobody was, as efficient on offense as the Golden State Warriors. They were next level on that end of the court, and they switched everything all year, all day, every day for two straight seasons, and no one knew what the hell was going on. They played playoff-level defense for two straight years in the regular season, and they were super equipped for the playoffs when those playoffs came around. So, until they ran up against LeBron James in the NBA Finals in 2016. And then they decided, you know what we really need is somebody who can just get us a bucket. So they went out and got the best guy at doing that, and that created a whole other situation. Point stands. They don't have a systematic advantage anymore. Straight up, everybody runs the Warriors stuff. Right. And Steve Kerr can try to run zone. That ain't unique either on defense. You got guys who, listen, Curry is not, going to take anybody by surprise. And people have thought for 5 years on how do you stop Stephen Curry one-on-one. They can't do it, but they can try. And it can certainly slow him down a little bit, make him think twice, make him have to work a little bit harder. Draymond Green, I don't know if he can defend three guys anymore. I don't know if there's enough Draymond Green to defend. He looks great. Now, I don't know if that's good for basketball, but he looks great. Peloton stock.
Shout out Sam, Peloton. That's right.
Yeah, Samus Fandiari said Peloton stock way up. And yeah. Just shaming me for not using mine on a more frequent basis. But it's like, dude, you don't have that anymore. So now you're just in the camp of a lot of teams that, let's be honest, aren't competing for a title. And I think that this is where my disconnect comes in. Welcome to the rest of the NBA. The rest of the NBA doesn't compete for a title on a year-in, year-out basis. Straight up. Yeah. Who are the three, four teams that can do it? I think it's the Lakers, clearly the favorite. I think the Clippers, if they get their act together, have a real chance to do it because they have the wing depth. I think Milwaukee absolutely has a chance to do it, and I think Drew Holiday gives them a much better chance than they've ever had before. And I think the Nets have a chance to do it because they have KD, and KD is incredible. Is there a team that I'm missing here?
I would throw Denver and Miami in there because I like their Miami. Young guys.
I'll give you Miami. I'll give you Miami, absolutely.
I love Nikola Jokic. I'm so in on
the listen, no, nobody loves the chunky boy more than Dieter, but like Jamal Murray is going to have to show me.
You and I are on opposite ends of the spectrum of Jamal Murray, and rightfully so. You don't tend to like players like Jamal Murray, and I tend to completely overvalue players like Jamal Murray. So
we'll see who's
you
right.
I feel like I really convinced you on that.
At least we're both in on the chunky boy.
Nikola Jokic. I said top 8 or 9 player in the NBA, and that was just me being like modest. I think.
Yeah, not trying to rock the boat too early. Not trying to get into Kyle guy territory.
Yeah, well, anyone Warriors fans will be like, well, you have him ranked above Steph now. I don't.
No.
I don't, but it's close.
Also, stop Warriors fans, you got to stop with this like people out here trying to get Steph. I'm not trying to get it. No one's arguing that Steph is incredible, just as no one's arguing that Dame Lillard is incredible. Dame Lillard's team sucked last year.
You need help. You just need help. And I don't think that he has it this year. It's the depth to me is really, really shaky. And that's when you see these ESPN projections with the Warriors outside of the playoffs looking in and people say it's freaking crazy. I'm like, it's really not, you know, like we kept talking about the problems with Oubre and Wiggins this year. If one of them gets the coronavirus or goes down with a hamstring tweak or something,
we're not even talking about Steph or Draymond. We're talking about Oubre and Wiggins.
I don't know that the Warriors can afford that.
Right.
And that's what we're talking about. When you look at those other teams,
yeah.
The institutional fortitude that they have with a pairing like LeBron and Anthony Davis, like you can lose Kent Bazemore or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope for 2 weeks and nobody will even like, oh yeah, he's not playing. I didn't even notice.
Right.
But when Steph is your lone all-star out there, your lone superstar out there.
Right.
Then you start to really notice these other things. And if you're missing one of them, it's really problematic. And I just, if the Warriors are healthy, I think they've got a shot to make the playoffs. I don't think they're a title contender this year. We'll see what it looks like next year when Klay comes back. But I think they're a playoff team if healthy. But that requires them being healthy in one of maybe what looks to be the unhealthiest season ever. Because one positive coronavirus test means that you need to be quarantined 10 to 12 days. Mm-hmm. 10 to 12 days. This is not the NFL. You don't miss one, maybe two games. Mm-hmm. All right? You're out. For 5-6 games potentially. That's it. Like that could be in a 72 game season, your season can be over given how close this thing is going to be at the end.
I'm just doing some quick math on the back of a napkin here. Actually, it's on a yellow legal pad. Steph, let's just say, gets 30 per game. I mean, then it becomes very obvious as to where the faults with this team are. We're giving Steph 30. Which I think is fair. I mean, honestly, it'd be more likely he doesn't than he does, but he's Steph Curry and he deserves the benefit of the doubt in this regard. I don't know how efficient it's going to be. And I do think that we're not talking enough about efficiency across the NBA, but ultimately let's give him the 30. Let's say that he is Steph Curry MVP level. What's a reasonable number of points per game for Kelly Oubre? 15?
Yeah.
What's a reasonable number of points per game for Andrew Wiggins? 15?
12.
Yeah, I mean, that first off, yeah. If we're saying 12 and you didn't bat an eye, I'll give him 15.
Yeah, let's do it. Benefit of the doubts all across the board, 15.
Draymond, 10.
8, but fine. All right, fine. Really benefit of the
Again,
doubts.
Again, rounding up. Wiseman, and this is an aggressive one, 10.
Okay.
Bazemore, 10 off the bench. I think he can do that.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, no. Jordan Poole, 10 off the bench. Can you agree with Jordan Poole, 10 off the bench?
Even I can't. I don't even know how much playing time Jordan Poole is. Okay. Random guard off the bench if it's my
fine. Yes. Jordan Poole, rando whoever, guard.
Damian Lee, rando guard, do another 8 or 10.
Eric Paschal, 10 points off the bench. That's or rando wing off bench.
Yeah, I think Paschal, you can get Paschal and then, probably get 10 and or then, 12 in garbage time.
And then what? You're getting another 10 points from everybody else.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. That's 120 points. That's a top five offense.
Yeah. That's a lot of that's benefit of doubt across the board.
Yeah. That's the best case scenario. We don't go best case scenario. It's 105 easy.
Well, that's kind of what to me the theme of what this whole conversation has been is, well, this needs to go right and this needs to go right and this thing over here also needs to go right.
Everything's
connected and everybody, like I said, when you ask about the offense, they talk about the defense. Everything is so linked in such a fragile way. That if you have one weak link, the whole thing falls apart. That's scary, man. I think you actually pointed this out really well in a column that you wrote last week about how there's just so many ifs that need to go right.
Yeah.
And typically when you need those many ifs to go right, something's going to go wrong. And you
not
would
even
bet on
that.
The,
just when has everything ever gone right ever in the history? It's 2020. I know that everything went wrong last year.
Yeah.
One thing can't go wrong this year.
So you need... Basically, what we're saying is either everything needs to go right for this team to hit its ceiling, which is a solid playoff team.
Yeah.
Or something surprises us, and James Wiseman just becomes just this super level center right away. Or
100%.
Somebody else emerges, right? Like Eric Paschal starts shooting
40% from three. This is the thing,
something
right?
Something surprises us.
One of those scenarios was Andrew Wiggins takes another step. And I've seen two games, and I feel very confident saying it ain't happening.
It's not. No, I think Kelly Oubre at this point has a better shot at maybe taking that step than Wiggins does. And by the way, who cares? If it's Wiggins or Oubre, it doesn't matter to me. It's sort of
– Oubre would be more fun.
Oh, my God. It would be so much fun. And you could see how, right? He's a little – he missed two dunks last night.
Still went for a third.
It still went for a third. You love that, but he missed two dunks. And one time his fault, he was fouled. And he was fouled hard. But it's like the great players to take that next step. You make that and then convert the and one. You don't get fouled in and go for one for two at the free throw line, right? Yeah. That's a big difference. He's going for it. And there's a push and pull here that reminds me a little bit of like 2-3 years ago with Boston between Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, where okay, who's going to kind of emerge? And Jason Tatum was like, "It's mine. I'm taking it. I'm the best player on the team now." And I kind of could see maybe Kelly Oubre doing that. The problem for the Warriors is that his contract expires after the season. Wiggins is under contract for 4 more years.
Yeah.
But if he proves that he can do that, they'll just re-sign him, right? And so – but that's a big if. But to me, I see a leap coming more from Oubre than maybe Wiggins because Oubre's younger, been in the league a year or two less, and has the mindset, man. Yeah. Like he freaking wants it, and he's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
And he is very handsome. I just had to throw that in there.
He is an extremely handsome young man.
Yes. He is part Instagram model, part very tantalizing basketball player.
Yeah. We said the same thing about Jimmy Garoppolo for a while, and that faded away. I mean, ultimately, my concern is that Wiggins, for being a very pretty boy, can play a little bit like a pretty boy, especially on the defensive end. And here's the thing. I'm so glad you brought up that Boston thing. I mean, I literally made that comparison last night where my wife is just like, oh, he's a pretty boy. And I go, yeah, and he plays like it too. Then he immediately gave up like three direct lanes to the basket. And I go, there's the guy. And here's the thing with that, though. Like, you're right. Tatum and Brown didn't know who was the alpha. And Jason Tatum's just like, I am the alpha. I'm going to take it. What did Jaylen Brown do? He decided, I'm going to be a defensive ace. I'm going to be the best 3-and-D guy in the NBA.
That's what Wiggins needs to do, right? And I've been thinking about that Boston thing a lot. And, like, it's not fair to make that direct comparison. These are two very different people, two very different teams. Two different
teams. They're not as handsome.
Who, Jaylen Brown and
good looking guys, and
Jason Tatum?
No,
the Warriors definitely have the better looking duo. So you know, take your pick, fans. but I
Draymond's getting back into it with the Peloton.
I mean, this is they might miss the playoffs, but they are gonna look good doing it.
Handsome team. Handsome team with bad basketball.
Steph's got the braids.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about the headband. I understand that Curry brand is logoed on it. And I understand he's a walking billboard for Curry Brand this year.
I'm a big fan of the headband. I'm a big fan of what they called the Ninja Band now that they got rid of the little knot on the back. I do need to mention that Damian Lee's headband is slowly engulfing his entire noggin, though.
He looked to me from the nosebleeds of Golden 1 Center yesterday, because God forbid we're 50 feet from the court, even. I was like, is that D'Angelo Russell out there?
Mm-hmm.
They had the headband with the long, he grew out his hair and everything. This is a good looking team.
Yep.
On the floor, it's really ugly, but so far in two games, but like I said,
at least we have that. Bad broadcast, bad basketball, handsome boys. The Warriors motto. When we're all vaccinated, that's how they're going to have to sell the team, which, by the way, they're clearly pushing "We Still Believe" as a motto. And I'm interested to see how hard they push on that one.
I'm in my head right now, and this is really good radio, but I'm workshopping like something that rhymes with "We Believe" that has to do with something about being handsome or something like.
No, I think it's the defensive motto. We're a sieve. That's basically how it's going. Wesley, it's been a pleasure as always. We're going to end on this extremely high note of basketball analysis.
Shout out, Kyle Guy.